Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso. Today, we have the latest news and reactions on the reopening of beaches, restaurants, retail shops, hair salons, and churches as our economy begins to reboot. We'll have a special report on domestic abuse on the rise during stay-home orders, plus hear about a local civil rights leader headed to Minnesota to speak out and help the family of George Floyd, a black man whose brutal killing by a police officer has sparked protests nationwide and riots in Minneapolis. Hear where you can find COVID-19 testing sites across our region, including rural areas, and hear why patients who survived COVID-19 are now being asked to donate plasma to save others. We'll have a report on our region's unemployment rates, which are double the national average. Now, if your license is expiring, hear the latest on DMV extensions. Then on People Power, hear about Santee residents rallying against hate. Lemon Grove is getting a digital billboard to help its budget blues. Plus, hear how you can volunteer to serve on a redistricting committee for county supervisorial districts. We'll have news about concerns over library budget cuts. Hemorrhagic rabbit fever found for the first time in Southern California, new backgrounds from county parks to liven up your Zoom meetings, and some barbecue safety tips as summer draws near. Plus, hear the inspiring story of an Iraqi refugee now making masks for other refugees, Native Americans, and healthcare workers to save lives. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. Just in time for summertime weather, beach towels and beach chairs can be brought to local beaches for lounging on the sand again starting Tuesday, June 2nd. But some restrictions remain under the new rules announced by the county's Health and Human Services Agency. Sitting or sunbathing together is only allowed with people in your own household. You must maintain 6 feet of social distancing from others and wear a mask if you come within 6 feet of anybody, such as when you're passing someone while walking or jogging. Parking lots and piers are still closed, so plan on walking to reach those sandy shores. Group activities such as volleyball or football remain prohibited. All beach communities locally have agreed to these eased restrictions. However, cities do have the power to determine how to enforce the guidelines and whether to reimpose limits if people don't follow the rules. It's important to know that the virus is still active in our area, though the growth curve continues to flatten. As of Friday, San Diego County has had 7,100 cases of COVID-19 and 260 deaths. 117 new cases were reported Thursday and 5 deaths, following 3 consecutive days where no deaths were reported. Testing continues to ramp up, with just over 3% testing positive over the last 2 weeks out of many thousands of tests administered. San Diego Mayor Kevin Faulkner has praised San Diegans for following social distancing rules when beaches were recently reopened locally for surfing, walking, jogging, and other solo activities. Taking up a megaphone at a local beach lifeguard stand, the mayor encouraged beachgoers to stay classy, San Diego. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
After weeks of stay-home orders during the COVID-19 pandemic, local organizations that support victims of domestic abuse report a sharp rise in people seeking services for the first time. Dilquaz Ahmed of License to Freedom, an organization that primarily serves refugee and immigrant victims of domestic abuse, told East County Magazine that 80% of the calls she received in the last month were from people who had never interacted with the organization before. She says, quote, "We have never been as busy as we have been during COVID-19, adding that License to Freedom's caseload has doubled since the start of the pandemic. The organization has been filing a restraining order on behalf of at least one victim almost every day. Ahmed reports that many issues reported by those seeking help are directly related to coronavirus. Abusers have used the changes in circumstances to seize power and control in households. Ahmed says victims have reported many instances of financial abuse, such as abusers keeping stimulus checks or hiding checks from their partners. The quarantine has created a lot of problems, says Ahmed, who serves primarily Middle Eastern communities, which are typically very family-oriented. Domestic disputes were often arbitrated by extended family, and abused partners could flee to family members' homes. Now, many people have had their safety plans to get away from abusers disrupted because they don't want to spread the virus to elderly parents or relatives. One woman told Ahmed that her husband threatened to kill her, yet she refused Ahmed's offer to pay for a hotel room. According to Ahmed, the woman said she would rather die than put her kids in a situation where they could contract coronavirus. Another organization, the Center for Community Solutions, or CCS, has not received a spike in callers overall to its 24-hour hotline, but has received many calls from people who never sought help from CCS before. Many of the issues they are experiencing also relate directly to COVID-19. Verna Griffin-Tabor, CEO of CCS, says, quote, "Some of the first-time callers are calling about their partners intentionally trying to expose them to COVID, refusing to wear a mask, taunting their partners that way." She views these tactics as ways for abusers to inflict fear and potentially put their partners at risk. Griffin-Tabor is also worried about other tactics, such as taking away insurance cards and documents to prevent victims from seeking care. At one point, CCS had no shelter capacity, but that has improved since landlords are still willing to meet with the clients, due in part to moratoriums on evictions for renters impacted by COVID-19. Griffin-Tabor says, quote, "We've been able to transition some of our folks into longer-term housing." Griffin-Tabor says the need for everything is much wider than in the past, including transportation, food, diapers, and shelter. KPBS reports that San Diego Sheriff's Department had a 3% increase in calls reporting domestic disputes from March 1st through April 25th, compared to the same time period a year earlier. But victims' advocates worry that the actual rate of abuse is much higher. With abusive partners staying home more, victims may have fewer opportunities to call hotlines for help. Griffin-Tabor concludes, "When things are lightened up in terms of the shelter-in-place order, I anticipate that we are going to get more calls. If you need help due to domestic violence or you know someone who does, CCS runs a free, confidential hotline 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You can call the hotline at 888-385-4657. That number again is 888-385-4657. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Brianna Gomez.
The brutal killing of George Floyd, an African-American man, by a white police officer, has sparked riots in Minnesota, including the burning of a police station, as well as protests nationwide. On Friday, Reverend Shane Harris, San Diego civil rights leader with the People's Alliance for Justice, flew to Minneapolis to deliver a large financial contribution to the family of George Floyd for funeral expenses. Reverend Harris also hand-delivered a letter to Hennepin County District Attorney Mike Freeman's office urging him to charge the officers or ask the Minnesota Attorney General's office to take the case. Video posted on social media showed an officer kneeling on Floyd's neck for some 9 minutes while Floyd repeatedly tells police officers that he can't breathe until he died. Officers claim he resisted arrest for a nonviolent offense before the filming began. Reverend Harris, in a statement sent to local media Friday, says a black man went to death row before he could ever get to court over an alleged nonviolent offense. He pledged support of his civil rights organization to Floyd's family and says the district attorney there has the responsibility to deliver justice to the people of Minneapolis and Hennepin County, and we are standing behind those residents until that is done. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery. And now we have some more on that story out of Minneapolis from Public News Service.
The Public News Service Daily Newscast, I'm Mike Clifford. The former Minneapolis police officer seen in a video with his knee on George Floyd's neck had 18 prior complaints filed against him with the Minneapolis Police Department Internal Affairs Unit. That's according to the police department and reported by CNN. It's unclear what the internal affairs complaints against the officer identified as Derek Chauvin were. The MPD did not provide additional details. Meantime, R. Mike Bowen is on the story. He reports that beneath the protests and riots against Minneapolis police sit layers of fear and frustration from the city's black community.
Residents say these feelings have been around for years and could take a while to result in real change. The death of George Floyd at the hands of a Minneapolis police officer has reignited cries from African Americans that they're routinely victimized by authorities. Robin Lewis, a lifelong city resident and neighborhood organizer, says it ranges from deadly encounters to racial profiling. She adds that for a black person, the trauma lingers.
It breaks people down. It brings fear among our own community where we live. It brings mistrust. People will tell you when you're driving and all of a sudden the police are behind you, you get scared.
And residents point to previous concerns about most Minneapolis officers choosing to live outside the city as creating communication gaps. Mayor Jacob Fry is urging non-black residents to consider these long-standing concerns. Residents say a lack of investment by financial institutions to help build communities adds to their frustration.
A 2017 Star Tribune analysis found that only about 8% of Minneapolis police officers actually live within the city limits.
San Diego County health officials have announced that houses of worship can resume worship services in person, but with limited numbers of parishioners, among other changes. The action follows Governor Gavin Newsom rolling out new state guidelines, allowing in-person worship services and ceremonies, although the state is encouraging alternatives such as online worshiping or outdoor services to protect parishioners and staff from COVID-19. Under the county's health rules, churches, synagogues, mosques, and other places of worship must limit attendance to 25% of capacity or 100 people, whichever is the least. Worshippers not in the same household must sit or stand 6 feet apart. The state recommends more steps, such as temporarily discontinuing singing, which has been found to spread the virus through exhaled droplets. Several COVID-19 outbreaks elsewhere have been tied to churches, resulting in illnesses and deaths. Religious institutions are also urged to take other steps, such as avoiding handshakes and hugging, discontinuing use of a shared communion cup, providing prepackaged communion items on seats before services, and using single-use prayer materials. Church staff should be screened for fevers. Cleaning and sanitation measures should be followed, and contributions should be given through secure drop boxes or touch-free electronic offerings instead of passing a collection plate. Governor Newsom's stay-home order prohibiting all gatherings, including religious services, since March 19th has been challenged in federal court by the South Bay United Pentecostal Church in Chula Vista, which argues that the ban violates the First Amendment. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled 2-1 to deny a temporary restraining order sought by the Chula Vista Church. The judges upheld the governor's action as constitutional to save lives in a pandemic. The majority opinion states, "We're dealing here with a highly contagious and often fatal disease for which there presently is no known cure." Now, the Chula Vista Church has appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court, which has not yet announced whether it will hear the case and could reject it as moot since the governor has announced rules for partial reopening of religious services. The U.S. Justice Department has filed a brief in support of the appeal. A lawyer for the Freedom of Conscience Defense Fund representing the church has called the governor's rules blatant religious discrimination. President Donald Trump called on governors nationwide to allow immediate reopening of places of worship, despite over 1.5 million cases of coronavirus in the U.S. and over 100,000 deaths in just 3 months. That's more than from the Vietnam War and the Korean War combined. California's health and political leaders plan a review in 3 weeks, along with county officials, to determine if more relaxation of rules on worship services may occur or restrictions may be reimposed if outbreaks occur that are due to religious services. Local religious organizations are now assessing when or whether to reopen for in-person services. Times of San Diego reports that San Diego's Roman Catholic leaders are planning to resume in-person masses in June. Bishop Robert McElroy, in a letter sent to priests across the diocese, suggested that the Feast of Corpus Christi on June 14th is the target date, but individual pastors could be allowed to resume daily Mass as early as June 8th. Parishioners are not required to attend Masses and may still opt to worship online. Changes will include no wine during communion, no wafers on tongues, face masks and social distancing required. Music will be limited to a single vocalist or instrumentalist. Prayer books and hymnals will be removed, and parishioners will be encouraged to wave or nod at each other instead of shaking hands and hugging. Shabbat of East County posted on Facebook that, for now, it plans to continue serving its Jewish members virtually, explaining traditions to empower its members to worship at their homes. The Universalist Unitarian Church has established a safe congregation team that has advised congregations to continue virtual gatherings through May. Guidelines posted online note that our risk-taking and our protective actions affect far more than just ourselves. Our affirmation that good science, coupled with our UU values, must be the basis upon which we make decisions about in-person gatherings. The UU site notes that in addition to spiritual needs, churches should consult with the congregation's attorney and insurance company about possible legal liability if COVID-19 transmission were to occur. But ultimately, the UU guidelines voice, quote, deep hope that we as a country and as a world will not return to normal when the pandemic is over. We seek to live into a new normal of more justice, more love, more equity, more sustainability, and more peace. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
The region's COVID-19 testing is expanding. The public can now get free testing at two new walk-up sites run by the state. The former county assessor's office on Magnolia Avenue in El Cajon and the Tubman Chavez Center on Euclid Avenue in southeast San Diego. The new state-run sites are in addition to state sites already operating in Escondido and Chula Vista. To make a free appointment at any state-run locations, visit lhi.care/COVID-testing or call 888-634-1123. LHI stands for Local Health Initiative, and again, that website is lhi.care/COVID-testing. Other tests are available for a fee. The county has opened an appointment-only drive-up testing site at the stadium in Mission Valley. That site can test up to 180 individuals a day and will operate Monday through Saturday from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. To make an appointment for the site at the stadium, county residents can call 211. Additionally, the county's Live Well on Wheels mobile office will offer COVID-19 testing at the Euclid Health Center each Saturday for the foreseeable future. An appointment is required. COVID-19 testing options include calling your doctor or medical provider to schedule an appointment, signing up for free tests on the state website at lhi.care/COVID-testing or calling 211 for the county-run sites. Recording for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Mitchell Murphy.
This is Miriam Raftery with some updates on new testing sites just added in East County's rural communities. The COVID-19 tests are available for everyone, although if you have symptoms, you're asked to call your doctor to arrange testing. For everybody else, you can call 211 to set up an appointment at any of these rural locations this week. June 1st and 2nd at the County Library in Ramona, June 3rd at the Library in Campo, June 4th at the Palma Valley School, June 5th at the County Library in Julian, and June 6th at the Cal Fire Station on Hamishai Road in El Cajon. Drive-up testing sites at these locations will be available from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. those days, and again, you need to make an appointment first by calling 211.
Unemployment analysis by the San Diego Association of Governments, or SANDAG, shows unemployment countywide is at 30.1%, an all-time high. That's far higher than the national average of 14.7%. And with 39 million Americans out of work as of last week, according to the Department of Labor, the national unemployment rate is the highest it's ever been, even worse than during the Great Depression. More than 500,000 people locally are unemployed, and nearly 460,000 of those lost their jobs after the COVID-19 pandemic began March 7. A zip code breakdown reveals that the worst unemployment rates as of May 7th are in our inland region, including East County and Southeast San Diego neighborhoods. The highest rates are in Logan Heights at 41.9% and the College area at 36.9%. Among East County cities, two El Cajon zip codes had 33.6% and 32.9% respectively. The Santa Isabel community had 32.9% and Escondido 32.5%. Inner city East San Diego neighborhoods, including Encanto, also had very high rates, as well as some South Bay and North County communities in the 32 to 37% range. All of these areas had low single-digit unemployment rates before the pandemic. The survey reflects data through May 9, before some restaurants and retailers began reopening in recent days. During the 9th week of lockdown due to coronavirus, unemployment rates continued to rise, with 22,800 jobs lost between May 2nd and 9th. As of May 21st, when SANDAG last updated its analysis, SANDAG reported new job information remained slow, with businesses making tough decisions, including claiming bankruptcy or choosing not to reopen after stay-at-home orders are lifted. Sandag indicated for the local economy to significantly improve will require completion of Phase 2 and beginning Phase 3 portions of the governor's roadmap to recovery. Over the past week, many restaurants have reopened for dine-in services, and retailers have begun reopening for shopping in stores. Some of these businesses are now hiring again, though it remains to be seen what degree customers will return, with some ready to venture out, but others opting to stay home longer to avoid potential exposure to the virus. Even if customers fill every table, however, restaurants face daunting challenges due to social distancing requirements, with some losing half to two-thirds of seating. Continuing takeout or delivery options may help cushion some of that loss. Phase 3 businesses are not yet open, including gyms, hair salons, and more. A cautionary note on moving too fast, however, may be found in Missouri, where one hairdresser working despite having symptoms in a reopened salon exposed 91 customers to COVID-19, CBS News reports. Phase 4 businesses that draw large crowds could remain shuttered until sometime next year, such as concert halls and sporting events with spectators. In addition, loss of conventions and tourists shying away from traveling on airlines and cruise ships can be expected to continue to depress San Diego's visitor-based economy for many months to come. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Brianna Gomez.
East County residents are sharing their reactions to decisions by state and county officials allowing restaurants to reopen for dine-in service and retailers to allow customers inside stores after a two-month closure due to the COVID-19 pandemic. While some voice joy at savoring meals out again, others express trepidation. Local healthcare officials, politicians, and activists have also weighed in. With 30.1% unemployment countywide and businesses facing mounting bills for rent and insurance, the opening comes as welcome relief for many business owners, even though concerns remain over how to turn a profit with fewer tables in restaurants and worries on whether or not consumers will return. La Mesa is home to East County's Restaurant Row. On Next Door, Marlette Seward posted, "I'm ready to support our local restaurants and retail stores. We will be there for sure." Chris Gio, similarly, notes that during the early stages of the pandemic, residents were asked to do their civic duty to stay home and businesses shut down. "Remember," he says, "they closed to help us flatten the curve and are now hurting. They helped us, we should help them." Several voiced desire to visit specific favorite local eateries, such as Anthony's Fish Grotto in La Mesa, which had announced plans to close down the longtime popular restaurant earlier in May, but after an outpouring of community support, the owner announced he would rehire his workers and has reopened for outdoor dining. But others say they just don't feel ready to venture out for dine-in service yet. Robert Junkst made clear he's staying home. "Let someone else be the guinea pig," he posted on Nextdoor, adding that due to medical issues, he and his family will not be dining out. "Everything points to a second wave. That's one wave I am not going to be riding," he says. Others, such as Chris Ellig of Mount Helix, say they'll be sticking with takeout food for the foreseeable future. Continuing takeout is one option for restaurants to recoup part of the profits they'll be losing due to new rules requiring fewer tables for social distancing. Two of the biggest healthcare organizations serving East County have indicated they were not provided adequate notice about the county's plan to reopen restaurants and retailers, and they both voiced concerns. Sharp Healthcare and Scripps Health are handling about 60% of the presumed COVID-19 cases here. Chris Van Gorder, CEO of Scripps Health, told KPBS that Scripps did not receive the county's proposed 180-page plan for reopening businesses, including restaurants and retailers, until the morning of the vote, without adequate time for input. Scripps recently had to transfer 56 patients from Chula Vista to other hospitals in the county after a spike in the South Bay, as well as receiving a recent influx of patients from Imperial County. Van Gorder worries that the trigger to renew restrictions relies on hospitals reaching 80% capacity, but that does not take into account capacity of ICU units or isolation rooms. If those fill up with COVID-19 patients, Van Gorder warns, we'd be in deep trouble. Two other healthcare systems, UC San Diego and Palomar, both supported the plan after meeting with county officials. State Senator Brian Jones wants the state to allow even more businesses to open back up. He says it's past time to set aside the ever-changing conflicting models, the politically motivated predictions, and instead get back to health and safety through personal responsibility and common sense, the Republican legislator from Santee concludes in a video sent to his constituents. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
The California Department of Motor Vehicles, or DMV, has announced additional extensions for non-commercial driver's licenses and permits so Californians can delay or avoid DMV office visits during the COVID-19 pandemic. The DMV has alerted California law enforcement of the new extensions. Californians with suspended licenses are not eligible for the extensions. Here's who is eligible. Drivers age 70 and older with a non-commercial license that expires in June or July will receive a 120-day temporary extension. The DMV previously announced a 120-day extension for licenses expiring in March, April, and May, and now the DMV is further extending licenses expiring in March to be valid through July 31st. Eligible drivers will receive a paper license extension in the mail. Drivers younger than 70 with a non-commercial license that expires between March and July will receive a temporary extension through July 31st. In most cases, these drivers are eligible to renew their licenses online. While the extension is automatic, drivers 69 and younger will not receive a new card or an extension in the mail. They could request a free temporary paper extension online through the DMV's virtual field office to document their extension. This is not needed to drive, but may come in handy when presenting your driver's license as proof of identification for other purposes such as banking or credit applications. Driver license permits that expire in July or August are extended 6 months or to 24 months from the date of application, whichever is earlier. All commercial licenses and learner's permits that expire between March and June will remain valid through June 30th. Some DMV offices have reopened to the public to serve customers with appointments and to process transactions that can only be accomplished at an office, including commercial driver's license transactions. Commercial drivers also can now submit medical certificate updates for their license through the DMV's virtual field office at virtual.dmv.ca.gov. The virtual field office now allows customers to upload documents, provide an e-signature if required, and pay fees with an e-check at dmv.ca.gov, as well as renew eligible driver's license and vehicle registration renewals. Applications for real ID cards are not available online. However, the federal government has extended the deadline for real ID cards a year until October 2021. After then, you will need a passport or a real ID to fly aboard a domestic flight or visit federal sites such as military bases. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Mitchell Murphy.
The San Diego Blood Bank is partnering with the county to encourage San Diegans who have recovered from COVID-19 to donate blood plasma, the liquid part of blood which contains antibodies. This plasma could help treat people who are hospitalized or seriously ill from the novel coronavirus. While currently there's no vaccine or proven treatment for COVID-19, convalescent plasma may help patients fighting the virus because the plasma has antibodies against it, says Dr. Wilma Wooten, the county's top health official. Any of the more than 7,000 people who tested positive for COVID-19 locally and have recovered could donate plasma, and this is being encouraged by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. David Wellis, the chief executive officer of the San Diego Blood Bank, says the procedure is simple but tremendously impactful. So far, several hundred doses of convalescent plasma have been distributed across Southern California, especially in San Diego County, but more is needed since supply is not keeping up with hospital demand. To donate, go to sandiegobloodbank.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is East County Magazine's People Power, profiling local people making a positive difference in our community and our world.
This is Miriam Raftery with a People Power report. A Santee community group known as Santee Loves organized Demonstrate Love, a vehicle rally held Wednesday to counter two racially charged incidents at a Santee Vaughn store and a Food for Less earlier this month. Those incidents, which went viral on social media and made international headlines, involved a man wearing a Ku Klux Klan hood and a couple who wore masks with Nazi swastikas. Both stores were in Santee, although the couple with the swastika mask don't live in the city and are residents of unincorporated El Cajon. Santee's mayor and other community leaders have denounced the actions. Those who wore hate symbols on their masks have claimed they were protesting the county's requirements to wear masks in stores due to COVID-19, but one of the men has a long history of ties to white supremacists. The sheriff investigated the incidents and concluded that though the actions were offensive, no laws were violated. The Santee Loves Vehicle Rally was designed to promote tolerance and inclusiveness. Though planned over the last 2 weeks, the event ironically occurred on the very same night that national protests erupted over the brutal killing of George Floyd, an African-American man, by a Minneapolis police officer. Dan Bickford started Santee Loves a year ago to celebrate the city's 40th birthday, but those plans went by the wayside when the COVID-19 shutdown was ordered. Despite racial incidents in Santee's past that the city has tried hard to overcome, even funding a rebranding campaign, Bickford says he's lived in Santee for 15 years and doesn't know of any KKK or hate groups in the city today. The rally drew dozens of local residents, including business leaders, Chamber of Commerce members, and members of local Rotary and Kiwanis service clubs, all taking a stand against hate. Santee's mayor, John Minto, and Councilman Rob McNellis were also present. Santee resident Justin Schlafe, who participated in the rally, says he was horrified to see photos on social media of the KKK masked man in the Vons store where he shops with his 3-year-old daughter. He says, "This is not what I want for my children." Another participant had a vehicle with a sign that read, "Mexican Gay Republican, Santee Loves Me." The driver, who asked not to be named, told our reporter that Santee has changed in the last 2 decades, adding, "I'm really excited to see the community coming together." The rally began at the Town Center Community Park, after which a bus festooned with anti-hate messages and other vehicles drove to Santee's City Hall, honking and shouting positive messages. At City Hall, Rabbi Rafi Andrusier, with Shabbat of East County, spoke, encouraging people to do good deeds and show kindness and respect toward others. The rabbi concluded, "Love your fellow as yourself, and that's what we're doing here. Goodness and kindness will vanish all those negative things, all the hate." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
Fiscally distressed Lemon Grove is counting on placement of a digital billboard near Highway 94 to create a new stream of municipal revenue. The community has long struggled with financial issues. City staff estimates that the structural deficit could approach $800,000 in the next fiscal year, exacerbated by the COVID-19 pandemic, a ballot measure that sought to raise the city's sales tax to address budgetary needs was defeated by voters in March, fueling concerns that Lemon Grove might have to revert back to being part of unincorporated San Diego County. The digital billboard is expected to bring in $325,000 or more during its first year and about $9 million over 2 decades, says city manager Lydia Romero. Lemon Grove City Council, last October, approved in concept the 65-foot-tall billboard to be built on city property on Olive Street, south of State Route 94. The sign, now in a design phase, will be operated by Outfront Media, LLC. Revenue from the digital billboard could help to balance the city's budget, perhaps cover the cost of improved public safety or road repairs, or pay for special events such as concerts in the park or the city's annual bonfire, says Mayor Raquel Vasquez. She notes that the lease agreement with Outfront Media requires removal of 2 double-sided billboards that she views as urban blight. The agreement with Outfront Media also provides for reduced advertising rates for Lemon Grove businesses, and the city will be able to post public service announcements. Plans call for the sign to be 2-sided, making it visible to motorists on both sides of the freeway. The billboard will measure 14 feet by 48 feet and will operate from 6 a.m. until midnight. After the city approves the final design, the billboard still needs a permit from Caltrans. Mayor Vasquez says that in addition to raising badly needed city revenue, it has the potential to draw new business to the community, also serving as a marker identifying the gateway to Lemon Grove. The billboard has drawn some controversy. Christopher Williams was denied a permit to open a medical marijuana dispensary near the property slated for the billboard. He says it's unfair for the city to allow a sign that can advertise cannabis products and not allow his cannabis shop nearby. Williams says he plans to take the city to court over the issue, but the city maintains that Williams' proposed dispensary is too close to a public park. The city has received several letters in support of the electronic billboard. John Bull at the Advertising Council says the digital sign could carry valuable public service announcements on topics such as preventing buzzed driving. Marty Gorsuch, CEO of the Farmers Insurance Open Golf Tournament, praises Outfront Media for its help in promoting the Champions for Youth charitable program. Nicole Kapritz, executive director of the Climate Action Campaign, says Outfront Media has been one of its strong community partners. Outfront Media also helped promote Mission San Diego de Alcala's 250th anniversary, according to Reverend Peter Escalante. Reporting for East County Magazine in Lemon Grove, this is Jonathan Getz.
Hair salons and barbershops have begun reopening across San Diego County this week under new county and state rules. The governor allowed these businesses in some, though not all, California counties to open again as long as they implement safety procedures. Supervisor Diane Jacob called the governor's action another welcome step in getting our businesses back into business. The order does not apply to nail salons, and certain close contact services remain prohibited, such as facials and shaves. 11 California counties were not granted the go-ahead due to continuing high rates of the coronavirus, including Los Angeles and Imperial counties in Southern California, raising the prospect that some may flock to neighboring counties in what has been dubbed haircut tourism. Guidelines include disinfecting booths, stations, and tools. Other changes must include removing high-touch amenities like coffee makers and magazines, using face coverings for staff and customers, staggering appointments to maintain social distancing, and making sure customers don't have symptoms. After 2 months, clients with overgrown tresses and dark roots have once again begun visiting their hairdressers in San Diego County following the lockdown, although health experts caution that despite safety steps, these businesses are still considered high risk due to the close contact involved. Roz O'Siren, owner of the Pret-a-Porter Salon and Spa in La Mesa, in anticipation of reopening, posted this note for her customers on Facebook. "We love you and miss you and can't wait to see you soon and to hear about your hair adventures." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
The county is now taking applications for people to serve on its Independent Redistricting Commission. Members will redraw district lines to reflect new data in the federal census. That's important since district lines can shape a community's ability to elect the supervisor of their choice to represent each district. The 2020 census numbers will reveal whether one district is more populated than the others. Each supervisor is supposed to represent a diverse population of about 650,000 residents. Redistricting commission members will reshape the district boundaries, acting independently from the Board of Supervisors. The county clerk of the board will take redistricting commission applications through July 31st. To qualify, volunteers must be San Diego County residents who've been registered to vote with the same political party or has no party preference for the last 5 years and must have voted at least once in the last 3 statewide elections. All applicants must be impartial, have analytical skills, and cannot have been active in politics in the past 10 years. Applications will be screened for the 60 most qualified applicants. One commissioner for each of the 5 districts will then be picked during a random drawing at the October 13th Board of Supervisors meeting. A second random drawing that day will select 3 additional commissioners for a total of 8. Those commissioners will meet to decide on 6 more to round out a 14-member commission. The Redistricting Commission must hold at least 7 public hearings in 30 days, including at least 1 hearing in each supervisorial district. The group will review the new census data when released and start the process on redrawing new maps for the 5 supervisorial districts. The maps must be completed by August 15, 2021. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Mitchell Murphy.
East County residents are sharing their reactions to decisions by state and county officials allowing restaurants to reopen for dine-in service and retailers to allow customers inside stores after a 2-month closure due to the COVID-19 pandemic. While some voice joy at savoring meals out again, others express trepidation. Local healthcare officials, politicians, and activists have also weighed in. With 30.1% unemployment countywide and businesses facing mounting bills for rent and insurance, the opening comes as welcome relief for many business owners, even though concerns remain over how to turn a profit with fewer tables in restaurants and worries on whether or not consumers will return. La Mesa is home to East County's Restaurant Row. On Next Door, Marlette Seward posted, "I'm ready to support our local restaurants and retail stores. We will be there for sure." Chris Gio, similarly, notes that during the early stages of the pandemic, residents were asked to do their civic duty to stay home and businesses shut down. "Remember," he says, "they closed to help us flatten the curve and are now hurting. They helped us, we should help them." Several voiced desire to visit specific favorite local eateries, such as Anthony's Fish Grotto in La Mesa, which had announced plans to close down the longtime popular restaurant earlier in May, but after an outpouring of community support, the owner announced he would rehire his workers and has reopened for outdoor dining. But others say they just don't feel ready to venture out for dine-in service yet. Robert Junkst made clear he's staying home. "Let someone else be the guinea pig," he posted on Nextdoor, adding that due to medical issues, he and his family will not be dining out. "Everything points to a second wave. That's one wave I am not going to be riding," he says. Others, such as Chris Ellig of Mount Helix, say they'll be sticking with takeout food for the foreseeable future. Continuing takeout is one option for restaurants to recoup part of the profits they'll be losing due to new rules requiring fewer tables for social distancing. Two of the biggest healthcare organizations serving East County have indicated they were not provided adequate notice about the county's plan to reopen restaurants and retailers, and they both voiced concerns. Sharp Healthcare and Scripps Health are handling about 60% of the presumed COVID-19 cases here. Chris Van Gorder, CEO of Scripps Health, told KPBS that Scripps did not receive the county's proposed 180-page plan for reopening businesses, including restaurants and retailers, until the morning of the vote, without adequate time for input. Scripps recently had to transfer 56 patients from Chula Vista to other hospitals in the county after a spike in the South Bay, as well as receiving a recent influx of patients from Imperial County. Van Gorder worries that the trigger to renew restrictions relies on hospitals reaching 80% capacity, but that does not take into account capacity of ICU units or isolation rooms. If those fill up with COVID-19 patients, Van Gorder warns, we'd be in deep trouble. Two other healthcare systems, UC San Diego and Palomar, both supported the plan after meeting with county officials. State Senator Brian Jones wants the state to allow even more businesses to open back up. He says it's past time to set aside the ever-changing conflicting models, the politically motivated predictions, and instead get back to health and safety through personal responsibility and common sense, the Republican legislator from Santee concludes in a video sent to his constituents. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Reverend Shane Harris, a civil rights leader with the People's Alliance for Justice, held a press conference to protest library budget cuts at the Malcolm X Library in San Diego on May 20th, the birthday of the slain human rights leader for whom the library is named. Mayor Kevin Faulkner has proposed $6.8 million in budget cuts to San Diego City libraries due to costs of the COVID-19 pandemic. The city estimates a $300 million economic toll on city finances in fiscal years 2020 and 2021 from the pandemic, due largely to lost hotel and sales tax revenues. But Reverend Harris says these libraries are essential places for our children and inner city community members. The People's Alliance for Justice launched a Book the Budget campaign to ensure our city's libraries are protected in the aftermath of COVID-19, especially the Malcolm X Library. The Malcolm X Library in San Diego is also a performing arts and cultural center serving largely the African American communities in Southeast San Diego, including Valencia Park, Lincoln Park, and Encanto. May 20th would have been the 95th birthday of Malcolm X, the African-American leader assassinated in 1965. The efforts by Harris to save library funding drew praise on social media, though Leslie Keel raised concerns over other priorities, particularly education. "Libraries are important, but what about schools?" Keel wrote, adding the schools in San Diego do not have the money to reopen. Students in low-income neighborhoods, primarily those of color, are falling more and more behind. They will be negatively affected by budget cuts, even more so than those from wealthier neighborhoods. While Keel agrees that protecting library funding matters, she concludes, there are even more fundamental issues being exacerbated right now because of budget cuts. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Mitchell Murphy.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
The County Parks and Recreation Department has created virtual photo backgrounds that you can use for video conferencing. Now, you can pose with a herd of bighorn sheep in the Anza Borrego Desert, hike to the halfway point of San Diego's toughest climb atop El Capitan, peruse the grounds outside a mountain cabin, visit a nature center or a historic adobe dwelling, enjoy a sunset over Lake Morena, stop to smell the lilacs in Sycamore Canyon, or pause alongside cows on the sprawling hillsides of Santa Isabel. Parks and Rec has selected some of their most popular pictures taken at iconic locales in our region's parks and made them available for download. Your virtual staycation awaits. Here's how to get started. If you're using Zoom, first go to sdparks.org. Click on Parks News Center and open the video conferencing background links. Then, from Zoom, open your settings, click Virtual Background, select the image, and wait for it to upload. You'll be immediately transported to a sunny SoCal destination. If you snap a screenshot during your conference, share with the hashtag UpsideOfInside. It's the coronavirus rendition of Parks and Rec's usual motto, Upside of Outside. You can also find links to all this and more at eastcountymagazine.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
Welcome to East County Magazine's Arts and Music Spotlight.
This is Brianna Gomez with East County Magazine Arts and Music Spotlight. Eager for entertainment? It's showtime in Santee. Although indoor movie theaters across California remain closed due to COVID-19, the Santee Drive-In Movie Theater reopened. The theater accepts cash only. If you go, you'll need to bring your own popcorn or other refreshments since the snack bar will be closed. Also, bring your own FM radio to listen to the movies by tuning in to 89.3 or 89.7 FM. Loaner radios are available with a refundable deposit. Guests must park 10 feet from other vehicles and stay in vehicles except when going to the restroom, when masks and social distancing are required. Drive-ins, once popular across the U.S., dwindled in recent years due to competition from multiplex movie theaters. But even after those theaters are allowed to reopen, concerns about COVID-19 may result in a resurgence of popularity for drive-in theaters. To view movie trailers of coming attractions and get ticket information, you can visit SanteeDriveInTheater.com.
This is Ed Barena with East County Magazine on KNSJ with some grilling safety tips. Fire Chief Sam DiGiovanna, East County Magazine's in-house fire chief and columnist, says that firefighters respond to many structure and wild land fires that involve barbecues around this time of year. He adds, quote, "We also treat many victims for injuries related to barbecues. Barbecue safety means sending the right smoke signal, and that signal is safety," unquote. While gas grills contribute to a higher number of home fires than their charcoal counterparts, all grills pose a risk for fires and burns. Grills should be placed well away from the home and decks, far from under the eaves or overhanging branches and vegetation. Other grilling safety tips from the National Fire Protection Association are as follows. 1. Propane and charcoal grills should only be used outdoors. 2. Keep children and pets at least 3 feet away from the grilling area. 3. Keep your grill clean by removing grease or fat buildup from the grills and in trays below the grill. 4. Never leave your grill unattended. Always make sure your gas grill lid is open before igniting it. 5. If you smell gas while cooking, immediately get away from the grill and call the fire department. Do not move the grill. If the flame goes out, turn the grill and gas off and wait at least 15 minutes before relighting it. 6. When using a starter fluid, use only charcoal starter fluid. Never add any other flammable liquids to the fire. Keep charcoal fluid out of the reach of children and away from heat sources. When you are finished grilling, let the coals completely cool before disposing of them in a metal container. And finally, use common sense and grill safely.
Advocates for fairness in higher education are praising the University of California system for dropping the standardized achievement tests known as the SAT and ACT in making admissions decisions, and they're calling on the Cal State system to do the same. Late last week, the UC Board of Regents voted unanimously to make the tests optional for 2 years, then stop using them entirely. Michelle Siqueiros with the Campaign for College Opportunity says the SAT and the ACT have been seen as biased against lower-income students and students of color who may not be able to afford expensive test prep classes.
What they don't do well is really predict whether a student has the capacity and intellect to actually succeed at the University of California.
Cal State has already made the tests optional for admissions this fall because the COVID-19 lockdown has interfered with many students' ability to take the exams. A new book out today from the Georgetown University Center on Education and the Workforce also asserts that American universities perpetuate income inequality when they rely on standardized test scores. It's called The Merit Myth: How Our Colleges Favor the Rich and Divide America. Siqueiros agrees that dumping these tests will make the system more equitable.
Students of color that are talented, low-income students across the country, they deserve a spot in the university too. It is about fairness, and a system that rewards the wealthy is not fair.
She says colleges will now have to decide whether to develop a new type of test, use the smarter balance tests that students currently take in high school each year, or move to a more holistic system of evaluating applications. Support for this reporting was provided by the Lumina Foundation. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
For the first time, rabbit hemorrhagic disease has been found in California. The virus was identified by state and federal laboratories in a jackrabbit carcass, one of 10 dead rabbits found on a private property in Palm Springs. The virus is highly contagious and often lethal to both wild and domestic rabbits, as well as hares and pikas. Infected rabbits and jackrabbits may exhibit no symptoms leading up to their sudden death, or they may suffer from fever, swelling, internal bleeding, and liver necrosis. The California Department of Fish and Wildlife is asking the public to report dead rabbits. Hunters, outdoor recreationists, and owners of rabbits are asked to take precautions to prevent spreading this virus, which is hardy and can stay alive on meat, fur, clothing, and equipment for a long time, making it easily transmissible to other areas. This virus is not related to coronavirus, and it does not affect humans or any other animals except those in the rabbit family. Deanna Clifford, a senior wildlife veterinarian with the state, says the virus could, however, also impact species that depend on rabbits for food, such as hawks, bobcats, and coyotes. The disease has spread very quickly in other states, causing mortalities of both wild and domestic rabbits in Arizona, New Mexico, and Colorado. Now, if you see any sick or dead rabbits, you're asked to contact the California Department of Fish and Wildlife Investigations Lab by calling 916-358-2790. When you're hiking, camping, or backpacking, do not handle any dead rabbits to minimize potential spread of rabbit hemorrhagic fever. Hunters should wear gloves when field dressing rabbits, then wash hands and bury the remains on site. There is no vaccine yet for this illness, so domestic rabbit owners should practice biosecurity measures to protect their animals, such as washing hands before and after working with or handling pet rabbits, and keeping domestic rabbits isolated from wild ones. If a pet rabbit becomes sick, contact your veterinarian, and if a domestic rabbit dies, contact the California Department of Food and Agriculture. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is East County Magazine's People Power, profiling local people making a positive difference in our community and our world.
This is Miriam Raftery with East County Magazine's People Power Report. Killian Collin is an Iraqi refugee in El Cajon who survived lockdowns during wars in Iraq and Syria. A longtime civil rights and labor activist, he has now started a mask-making campaign that is protecting thousands of the most vulnerable people during the COVID-19 pandemic. He says, "Helping other people was the only way that I survived through different risks and wars I went through." His masks have been sent to protect healthcare workers in San Diego and in cities across the nation, including hard-hit New York City, as well as to farmers in the Midwest, farm workers in Oregon, asylum seekers in Mexico, and tribal members of the Navajo Nation in Arizona. Collin was visiting in Asia back in January, so he started wearing masks when the pandemic hit Vietnam and Taiwan. After he came home, he kept wearing the masks to his classes at San Diego State University, only to find students and even professors making fun of him. He says, "I had no option but to face some of those bullies and told them I was protecting them by wearing this mask, since I had no idea if I carried the virus with me home." Then in mid-March, SDSU moved classes online. Without spending an hour daily commuting, Collin had time to spare, so he started making several masks to offer online to whoever needed them. He found patterns online and cut up clothes from his own closet that he no longer needed. Sewing by hand, it took him an hour and a half to make each of those masks at first while watching TV at home. He posted them on Facebook free for anybody who needed them. Within hours, a friend gave him a sewing machine and another offered to buy $200 worth of fabric, provided Colin would make 200 masks for asylum seekers waiting in crowded camps in Mexico for their hearings in the U.S. He learned how to use and maintain a sewing machine by watching YouTube videos and was soon able to make a mask in just 30 minutes. He made enough for the asylum seekers and also posted more on Facebook for others in need. Colin recalls, "People from all over the country started to message me and ask for masks for local healthcare workers." So next, he posted a fundraiser on Facebook to buy more fabric, and donations poured in from across the nation. Locally, his backers include the Minority Humanitarian Aid Foundation, Lemon Grove City Councilman David Arambula, the Oasis Legal Aid Foundation, and San Diego City Council candidate Kelvin Barrios. Soon, Colin was making 50 masks a day, working 12 hours daily. "It was a power that I never thought I had in the past," he reflects, but he adds, "it comes with some sacrifices and risk-taking when going to stores to buy fabric and other supplies to make masks." Colin says he is at high risk due to an immune-compromised system. So he dons a double face mask, a chemistry lab goggle, and face shields to go shopping. He sprays his car and products with disinfectants, and then after returning home, takes a shower, washes, dries, irons, and cuts all that fabric into patterns. He says he's made hours of mistakes, learning the best techniques, all of which he's done as a volunteer. Soon, he and organizations that backed his efforts started shipping masks across the country to help healthcare workers, farm workers, asylum seekers, and Native Americans. Most recently, after hearing about devastating rates of COVID-19 on the Navajo Nation's reservation in Arizona, he started working with contacts there to deliver 600 masks and help stop spread of the deadly virus on the reservation. More donations poured in. Colin says, "My heart is overwhelmed with the support that I got from people around our country to help with my Navajo Nation aid project." On Facebook, people have praised his efforts. One woman called him a guardian angel. Councilman Arambula thanked Colin, writing, "You've inspired many of us to join your selfless efforts and making a difference in countless others." Despite losses some may face due to COVID-19, Killian Colin wants each of us to remember this pandemic by how many people you helped. He concludes that despite divisiveness among political leaders and protests over lockdowns, which he believes showed us the worst in our country, the pandemic also showed that most of us are united behind a great cause to save and support each other during this pandemic. And he says, if you are helping other fellow human beings during the pandemic, please take a minute and be proud of your kindness and generosity. Donations of fabric and elastic, rubbing alcohol, and sewing machines are welcome as more people step forward to help Killian Colin sew masks to meet the growing needs to protect as many people as possible. People can donate to Killian Colin via PayPal, Venmo, or find him on Facebook, and his name is spelled K-I-L-I-A-N-C-O-L-I-N. That's Killian with one L, and Colin, C-O-L-I-N. The former Iraqi refugee, now helping to save lives a world away from his homeland, concludes, "Thank you from the bottom of my heart for every guardian angel that is supporting me in this project." This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, Royalty Free Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show, or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show.